American History Eft, Part 3. American Idol Worship. Critical thinking question. How does the supposed disrespect of a piece of cloth by the owner of said piece of cloth somehow become a more serious offense in the minds of most people than the violation of the property rights of the owner of the piece of cloth?
An enraged man who says he's a U.S. veteran cut down the American flag outside of a store. Why, you say? Because the Mexican flag was being flown above it.
I took this flag down in honor of my country with a flag, with a knife from the United States Army. I'm a veteran. I'm not going to see this done to my country. If they want to fight us, then they need to be men, and they need to come and fight us. But I want somebody to fight me for this flag. They're not going to get it back.
Well, there were no takers on that. The owner of the store, by the way, is an American.
He's flying another flag over the American flag in this country. Now reports are that he's the guy who could be charged with a crime. With us now, the man of the hour, military vet Jim Brizard. Jim, what made you do this?
Well, my patriotism is in my heart and in my soul. As you know, I'm a vet of the United States Army, and it is important to me, above all, that our country remember to be patriotic, and I was raised in that light. I heard on the Bill Manners show that the flags were flying as they were. I found it disturbing to the point that I had to do something about it. I grabbed my K-bar, I went down there, and I left my vehicle a couple doors down. I found a TV camera rolling as I walked up. I did what was in my heart.
How did you get up there?
I actually drove my vehicle up there, a couple miles from my home, actually.
All right, and to the flagpole, you just yanked it down.
I'm sorry, yes, I cut the anchor cord. I reeled the both flags down, and then I cut the flag. I cut the American flag off of the post.
What was the owner of the store, Jim? What was the owner of the store doing when you were doing this?
The owner of the store was without speech. He simply stood by and watched. I don't believe he knew what to respond with.
He was frozen in time is what he was.
Yeah, now, Bill, from what I understand, Jim is in legal hot water, not the owner of the store. That seems a little weird, but what happens now? Breaking point for you, Jim, was when you saw that Mexican flag flying above the American, that was it, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm not going to have that on my watch. It's just not going to occur. If I need to be involved to the extent I was involved, certainly, I'm ready for any consequences that might come my way, but I have much support out there.
Neil, I can tell you real quick.
I wish we had more time. Bill, I wish we had more time. I want to thank you both. And Jim, remind me never to tick you off. All right? Good job, my friend. Very good job.
I'm a peaceful man.
In the previous episode of School Sucks Podcast, I was discussing a trick used by those in power. Whether this trick is consciously executed or it is just the sum of several smaller aspects of public management, I'm not sure. But the trick, which could be summed up really in one word, nationalism, or one phrase, a collective national identity, works like this. We have a group of people, the kind of people with the psychological profile where they seek power over the lives of other individuals that they don't know anything about. You have intellectuals who surround these kinds of people to feed them ideas and encourage them. You have an agenda that they are all working towards, and you have the means by which they work towards that agenda, basically the levers of power, like government. There's nothing good about this. In fact, this is completely sinister on all levels. So in order for it to survive, It needs to be wrapped up, coded, costumed in some kind of illusion, which is a national identity. You see how the government in America becomes synonymous with the country. This is especially true in the last 10 years or so, where criticizing the government was said to be unpatriotic. And that's nothing new. I mean, this happened during World War II. It happened during World War I. It happened before that as well. So this is not a new idea. So once you take these sick and powerful people and wrap them up in the illusion of national identity, then you need to attach the national identity to something virtuous, something good, noble cause, national interest, salvation for the entire world. You can get really creative. Now, I know what some of you are saying. Brett, this would never work. Because all of the parts in this illusion are still entirely visible. People can see the individuals calling themselves government. They can watch them work. They would immediately know, if they paid attention, that these are not people like me. I would not do these things. I don't want to be attached to these kinds of people in any way. They can follow the supposed virtuous agenda of the country. They could even make a checklist of all of the wonderful and noble things that the government says it's going to accomplish. And sooner or later, they would have to admit to themselves that they had checked off none of those things. In fact, if they had created a checklist with the opposite agenda, they would be almost done with it by now. And they look at the other people that they are supposed to be pooled together with, just other citizens or subjects, whatever. You could say, I'm nothing like these people. We have no common bond. There's nothing that innately binds us together. This is a ruse. This is ridiculous. And this is insulting. And I do not fall for it. Well, yeah, that would be a real issue. So why don't we put our authoritarian sociopath thinking caps on for a moment and see if we can find a way around this problem that would obviously occur. Because this is such an insulting illusion that any halfway decent and even slightly intelligent person would never go along with. So what do we do? What do we do as authoritarian sociopaths? Remember, we have those thinking caps on, and we will take them off before we hurt somebody, because it would only be a matter of time before we did. Well, here's a thought. Because people being individuals, respecting themselves as individuals, respecting their self-ownership, would never want their self swallowed up by this collective nonsense, by being attached to people who are nothing like them, that they don't have anything in common with, and even worse, being attached to people who are clearly violent and dangerous and despicable human beings, being forced to work towards or support an agenda that never gets accomplished, while at the same time they are actually basically being used for an agenda that is the opposite of what they were told. And this would suck, and people would bail on this kind of thing immediately. So what if we, authoritarian sociopaths, could get them to just focus on symbols of the nation that we create? Like we put out in front of all of the other visible parts these symbols that inspire pride and belonging and nostalgia, symbols that stand for courage and bravery and virtue. And we say, just look here. You don't need to look off in the distance at what's hiding behind this. Just look right here. If we could even get rid of the individuality and get them to attach their very identity to the symbols, that might head off a lot of problems before they even happen. How would you do that? Well, you could rely on a tactic that has continuously proven to be very effective in public opinion management, in government school, and strangely enough, also in the domestication of animals. Repetition.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The Strange Origin of the Pledge of Allegiance by John W. Baer, written in the summer of 1989. Every class day, over 60 million public and parochial school teachers and students in the United States recite the Pledge of Allegiance, along with thousands of Americans at official meetings of the Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Elks, Masons, American Legion, and others. During the televised bicentennial celebration of the United States Constitution for the school children on September 17, 1987, the children as a group did not recite any part of the Constitution. However, President Reagan did lead the nation's school children in reciting the pledge. Yet probably none of them knows the history or original meaning of the pledge. In the presidential campaign of 1988, George Bush successfully used the pledge in his campaign against Mike Dukakis. Ironically, Bush did not seem to know the words of the pledge until his campaign manager told him to memorize it. The teachers and students in the New England private schools he attended, Greenwich County Day School and Phillips Andover Academy, did not recite the pledge. By contrast, Dukakis and his mother, a public school teacher, recited the pledge in the public schools. Yet Bush criticized Dukakis for vetoing a bill in Massachusetts requiring public school teachers, but not private school teachers, to recite the pledge. Dukakis vetoed the bill on the grounds that it violated the constitutional right of free speech. How did this pledge of allegiance to a flag replace the United States Constitution and Bill of Rights in the affections of many Americans? Among the nations in the world, only the USA and the Philippines, imitating the USA, have a pledge to their flag. Who institutionalized the pledge as the cornerstone of the American patriotic programs in indoctrination in the public and parochial schools? In 1892, a socialist named Francis Bellamy created the Pledge of Allegiance for Youth's Companion, a national family magazine for youth published in Boston. The magazine had the largest national circulation of its day, with a circulation around 500,000. Two liberal businessmen, Daniel Ford and James Upham, his nephew, owned Youth's Companion. 100 years ago, the American flag was rarely seen in the classroom or in front of the school. Upham changed that. In 1888, the magazine began a campaign to sell American flags to the public schools. By 1892, his magazine had sold American flags to about 26,000 schools. In 1891, Upham had the idea of using the celebration of the 400th anniversary of Christopher Columbus's discovery of America to promote the use of the flag in public schools. The same year, the magazine hired Daniel Ford's radical young friend, Baptist minister, nationalist, and Christian socialist leader, Francis Bellamy, to help Upham in his public relations work. Bellamy was the first cousin of the famous American socialist Edward Bellamy. Edward Bellamy's futuristic novel, Looking Backward, published in 1888, described a utopian Boston in the year 2000. The book spawned an elitist socialist movement in Boston known as nationalism, whose members wanted the federal government to nationalize most of the American economy. Francis Bellamy was a member of this movement and a vice president of its auxiliary group, the Society of Christian Socialists. He was a Baptist minister, and he lectured and preached on the virtues of socialism and the evils of capitalism. He gave a speech on, quote, Jesus the Socialist, unquote, and a series of sermons on the socialism of the primitive church. In 1891, he was forced to resign from his Boston church, the Bethany Baptist Church, because of his socialist activities. He then joined the staff of the Youth's Companion magazine. By February of 1892, Francis Bellamy and Upham had lined up the National Education Association to support the Youth's Companion as a sponsor of the National Public Schools observance of Columbus Day, along with the use of the American flag. By June 29th, Bellamy and Upham had arranged for Congress and President Benjamin Harrison to announce a national proclamation making the public school flag ceremony the center of the National Columbus Day celebrations for 1892. Bellamy, under the supervision of Upham, wrote the program for this celebration, including its flag salute, the Pledge of Allegiance. His version was, "I pledge allegiance to my flag and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all." This program and its pledge appeared in the September 8 issue of Youth's Companion. He considered putting the words fraternity and equality into the pledge, but decided they were too radical and controversial for public schools. The original pledge was recited while giving a stiff, uplifted right-hand salute, criticized and discontinued during World War II. The words, "my flag," were changed to "the flag of the United States of America," because it was feared the children of immigrants might confuse my flag for the flag of their homeland. The phrase, "under God," was added by Congress and President Eisenhower in 1954 at the urging of the Knights of Columbus. The American Legion's Constitution includes the following goal: to foster and perpetuate 100% Americanism. One of its major standing committees was the Americanism Commission, and its subsidiary, the Counter-Subversive Activities Committee. To the fear of immigrants, it added the fear of communism. Over the years, the Legion has worked closely with the NEA, the National Education Association, which is a teachers' union, and with the United States Office of Education. The Legion insisted on 100% Americanism in public school courses on American history, civics, geography, and English. The pledge was part of this Americanism campaign, and in 1950, the Legion adopted the pledge as an official part of its own ritual. In 1922, the Ku Klux Klan, which also adopted the 100% Americanism theme, along with the flag ceremonies and the pledge, became a political power in the state of Oregon and arranged for legislation to be passed requiring all Catholic children to attend public schools. The United States Supreme Court later overturned this legislation. Perhaps a team of social scientists and historians could explain why, over the last century, the Pledge of Allegiance has become a major centerpiece in American patriotism programs. A pledge or loyalty oath for children was not built around the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Or the Gettysburg Address. Oh, no. A new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Too bad the people who wrote those things didn't believe them. Apparently, over the last century, Apparently, over the last century, Americans have been uncomfortable with the word equality as a patriotic theme. In 1992, the nation will begin its second century with the Pledge of Allegiance. Oh, no. Perhaps the time has come to see that this allegiance should be to the Constitution and not to a piece of cloth. Oh, the end. And didn't he just blow it at the end there? It's not cloth that you pledge allegiance to, everybody. It's paper. Ah. He drew us in. He took us all the way to the end. And he suckered us, didn't he? Seems like everybody is trying to trick us today. But I still include this article because I think that he makes some interesting points. He gives us a little bit of context where the pledge came from. And we see how something that I've addressed before, how special interests use this captive audience of public education to push an agenda, right? You have socialists and, you know, these American Legion and Veterans Associations, not necessarily teaming up, but both working towards the same goal. Throw the Klan in there, too, while we're at it, because they did the same thing in Oregon. So isn't that interesting? And the result always seemed to be the same, the destruction of the individual. But here is a good example of what we're talking about in this series of shows. It's not just the destruction of the individual. It's also the invention and the expansion of a myth about the nation. So I hope that was informative. This episode could be, you know, 20 minutes. It could be 6 hours. This is a huge subject. I felt like this was something that really needed to be included in this history series because this is such a nasty little ruse that so many of us, so many people just fall for all 12 years of school. And while I'm not really into making specific suggestions about what people, especially people who are still students, should do, I would be interested to hear, I'll put it like this, I would be interested to hear what happens if you are still a high school student who's forced to do this ritual every day. If you went into school and said, I no longer feel comfortable participating in this, and maybe even give a couple of reasons why. If that's something that you'd like to try, please let us know how it goes. You will be a guest on the show, and we can talk about it. Until next time, thank you very much for listening. The only announcement that I really have is I will be a speaker at the Liberty Forum in March. I will very soon be providing information about an offer code for how you can use an offer code for School Sucks Podcast to get a discount for admission to the Liberty Forum. And thanks to Jason Osborne for the continuous support to the show. If you haven't checked out the movie trailer for Chartorum, please go do that and leave some comments for YouTube. Help create a little buzz for that. It should be a very interesting project when it's all done and it comes out. I'm not sure how that film is going to be distributed, but if I know more, I will definitely tell you about that. The other thing that you can look for in the near future is some guests will be coming in to help me finish out this series on American history. It's not too late to suggest some other people that you might like me to include. My email right now is brett@edulution.com, and there is a form that you can fill out on the website School Sucks Project to reach me. And I always appreciate people's feedback. I always appreciate people's suggestions. And if you have sent me some kind of question or some kind of suggestion and there hasn't been any response, I promise I am I'm certainly working to get back to everybody as soon as I can. So thanks for listening, and until next time, take care. And please don't pledge allegiance to strange things. Thanks. But this is the place I call my home. I live with the lies and the fear all alone.
Flag flying upside down in Krivitz to protest a decision made by the village tonight. That symbol is dividing the small community. NBC 26 reporter Rachel Stockman is in Krivitz with more.
What started off as a question about whether this restaurant could get a liquor license has now turned into a full-fledged village brawl. And the question now, is this flag a sign of distress, and were someone's constitutional rights violated?
It's a flag in distress that some argue is a sign of disgrace. So upsetting for this man, he came with a knife to cut it down.
Raise the flag properly. You are violating the law. You are trespassing.
I don't care.
You're pissing me off.
But it's upside down for a reason. A reason we'll get to soon, but first.
All cops, bring it down.
this a sign of the deep division in this community that started at Village Hall and Vito Congini's Supper Club.
That'll be a small dining area. And
Vito says he can't open the restaurant because the village denied his liquor license, a license he says he was promised.
We put everything that we owned into this. We're about $180,000 in debt right now.
So to show his distress, he raised this flag.
I've been to war more than once. I go over to other countries to fight tyrannical governments from doing whatever they want to their citizens, and then I have to come home and deal with that here? That's not fair. It's not right that the American people should have to fear their local government bodies.
But if you ask the man standing on Vito's roof, he'd disagree, and so apparently do the village cops.
I saw the village police, the two full-time officers and two part-time officers, stealing my American flag from Vito Congini's flagpole.
The village would only issue this statement. The liquor license was denied for economic reasons, and due to potential legal action, the board will make no further comment. As for this man, Marinette County deputies came and told him to leave. But that's likely not the end of this dispute. Vito plans to appeal the village's actions at circuit court. In your corner in Krivitz, Rachel Stockman, NBC 26.
I pledge allegiance to the flag.
What do those words mean to you? To me, they say, thank you, America, for your strength, for your courage, and for our freedom. Which has been a beacon to the world for 200 years.
Of the United States of America.
Whose bright stars are 50 states, each bearing its own stamp of individuality. People, 200 million strong. People who have come to her from all corners of the earth.
And to the Republic for which it stands.
A land of laws, an ingenious system of checks and balances, that allows no man to become a tyrant and lets no group prevail if their power is not tempered with a real concern for the governed. A land where the right of dissent and free speech is jealously guarded, where the ballot box is the sword and the people its wielder.
One nation under God.
A land where freedom of worship is a cornerstone of her being. A land graced with temples and churches, synagogues and altars that rise in profusion to embrace all the religions of the world.
Indivisible.
A land forged by the hot steel and raw courage, informed forever by the awful crucible of civil war.
With liberty.
Where man, in pursuit of an honest life, will not be denied his chance. Where her citizens move freely within her vast borders without hindrance or fear, a land brimming with opportunity, where freedom of choice is the guideline for all.
And justice.
The courts of our land are open to all. Its wheels of justice grind for all causes, all people. They look to every avenue for justice, every concern of the law, and they temper their reasoning with mercy for all.
Forever.